In the aftermath of World War II, Clara, once a German wartime icon and heiress to the Falkenberg Ironworks, finds herself on the run from the Allied authorities, accused of complicity in her father's war crimes. Hiding who she really is, Clara returns to her hometown of Essen, but finds everything changed.
She scanned Falkenhorst's roof for the family's red and orange banner that used to fly over the house. They had taken it down in the war, but it was still the first thing she looked for, that spot of flame in the sky. Sluggish, the flag stirred, unfurled for a moment, and when she saw the deep blue and bits of white and red, she slid to her knees behind a hedge. The Union Jack over Falkenhorst. The British had taken over the estate.
In this edition of Historical Fiction, Malin Hay talks to author Annika Scott about her debut novel, Finding Clara, an intense portrayal of what it means for ordinary people to be on the losing side of a war.
This is Historical Fiction.
So, Annika, thanks for joining us. Can you describe your new novel, Finding Clara, for us?
Finding Clara is about three Germans right after World War II who are forced to face their own past and to reckon with what they have done and what kind of future they can look towards. Clara Falkenberg is the main character. She was an industrialist in Essen, Germany, called the Armory of the Reich at the time. And she's been on the run from the British authorities because she doesn't want to be taken to Nuremberg like her father, who is sitting there awaiting his trial for war crimes. So Clara knows that she's under suspicion for war crimes herself, and she comes out of hiding only when she's forced to seek shelter, hopefully for her, with a friend who she hasn't seen since the war. When she finds out this friend has disappeared and has been gone since the war, then she sets out to find this friend. And during this quest, Clara really has to take a good hard look at what she herself was and is and wants to be. The story also features a very charming black marketeer named Jacob Relling, who is also part of her quest, and also a teenage boy named Willie. And he's the most mysterious character of all. He is a boy who refuses to accept that Germany lost the war.
What inspired you to write the novel?
I was inspired to write the novel by the city I live in Essen, Germany. When you go out the door of my house, you can go down a hill and you're almost at the Ruhr River. And along the river, there are these cliffs. And so when I first moved here, I would just sort of walk around in the woods and along these cliffs. And that's where I saw an entrance to an abandoned coal mine just there in the cliff. So these are just these black holes that are blocked off by sort of rusted iron bars. And I've always really been fascinated by kind of abandoned places or lost places. So I was really intrigued by these abandoned coal mines. They're all over Essen. They're under the streets. They're part of the reason that sometimes, you know, the Autobahn will just kind of collapse or a house will collapse in a certain place because of these old tunnels that have been there for hundreds of years. So really that setting was the first kind of spark that inspired me to think of a story, or at least setting a story there. Also, I personally am from the Detroit area, so a very industrial, or used to be a very industrial area. And Essen was, in World War II, the city of industry. It was called the Armory of the Reich, or at least they wanted to be called that. And that was one of the reasons that the Allies bombed Essen. It was sort of one of the top cities at the top of their list to be bombed. So for my inspiration for the story really came from these two directions, really the setting that I personally live in, but also just the history and the identity of the city of Essen itself.
How crucial would you say that Essen was as a city to Germany's war effort?
Essen was very crucial to the war effort on the German side during World War II, absolutely no question. There were sort of two sides to that. There was sort of the propaganda side. Hitler and Mussolini both visited Essen right before World War II started. They were together, and there's photographs of them waving from sort of a balcony to these masses around him. And this was a symbolic visit because the city of Essen at the time wanted to present itself as this absolutely necessary and crucial industrial city that was supporting the new regime through heavy industry. So that's coal mining, iron works, and most of all, steel works. So for instance, the Krupp steel works and the Krupp family were as complicit as many of the other industrial families, if not more, in what Nazi Germany had done as far as building munitions and locomotives and other heavy industry. So Essen was so important to the war effort that when you look at the lists of cities that the Allies looked to bomb during World War II, Essen was right there close to the top, if not at the top, depending on what you look at. And the number of bombs that were dropped on Essen in particular and the entire area, the Ruhr River area, was massive, and they still routinely find bombs here from World War II and evacuate people. So Essen was absolutely crucial to the war.
One of the really interesting details in the novel is about this network of mines which runs underneath Essen. Can you visit the mines today?
The mines underneath Essen are mostly so old that I don't think anyone has a map that shows where all of these tunnels are. Some of the research that I'd done from the World War II era show how some of the tunnels under the city were used as air raid shelters. Others were just collapsed. Part of the reason is that the coal mining had been here for hundreds of years and nobody really had kind of mapped out where everything was. So at the moment, most of the things that you can find in Essen are, you know, just not available. You can't actually go down into the mines. And so what I had to do when I was researching the book was go to a city next door to Essen. It's called Bochum. And they have a mining museum that's absolutely brilliant. And they rebuilt a coal mine, basically, a deep mine, so we could get in an elevator and go down into this tunnel. I don't remember how deep, but it was deep. And it felt like you were going down really far. And since they had reconstructed, it wasn't a working mine, but they reconstructed exactly what a working mine would look like when we came out as part of this tour, then, you know, I immediately could feel how closed in, you know, a mine was. And this was a very well-lit modern mine. But, you know, once you kind of left the main paths, which I did as an author, I kind of went off on my own here and there. You immediately see how dark a mine tunnel could be. You immediately see how disoriented you can get when you're in a mine. So I was able to get that sort of visceral experience with a mine through a reconstructed one. There's also in the part of Essen where I live, there's sort of a little local coal mine museum that also had a smaller reconstructed mine that I could do the same thing. You could go just a little bit further in. And I think the main thing that struck me was what sound does in a mine, how sound sort of is swallowed up and yet echoed sometimes. And also just the complete lack of light at some point, which can happen so suddenly. And then you're in complete blackness.
The central figure of the novel, Clara Falkenberg, she's this industrial heiress and a kind of poster girl for Nazism. Was there a real figure that you drew on to create this character, or was it totally a figment of your imagination?
Clara was definitely a fictitious character. If you look at the industrial families in Germany during World War II, many of them, if not all of them, for various reasons, collaborated with the Nazis. And if I was to actually take a real person from one of those families and write a book about them, I probably would have gotten into trouble. I just didn't want to do that. Plus, it's much more fun to dig into a fictional character who's inspired by these real industrial families, because at least with this fictional character, I can just go in the directions of these questions that I wanted to explore and the themes that I wanted to explore in the book. So Clara was a figment of my imagination, but she was inspired by some of the, you know, great German industrial families from companies that you will have heard of, you know, like BMW and Porsche and Krupp. These are all were family-owned companies, and they all have their pasts that some of these families have not exactly looked very closely at. since World War II, and that was one of the things that inspired me to write Clara and the Falkenberg family.
One of the major themes of the novel is this idea of guilt or of coming to terms with the horrors of war, not from the perspective of an outsider, but as a participant in those horrors. What drew you to this theme?
When I first came up with the idea for Finding Clara, I knew that it was going to be a big challenge to write the book from the perspective of a German who was complicit in what was happening in World War II. But that was a challenge I really wanted to do because, for me, one of the fundamental questions as an American, but living in Germany, looking at Germany at that time is, if I had been there, what would I have done, maybe? What would I have decided? It's really easy in hindsight to say, well, I would have tried to resist or I would have tried to do what's right, because we're looking at it, you know, from our privileged position now. For somebody, a German sitting in Germany at that time, in particular, someone with the sort of agency that Clara had. Her family was powerful. She had options. She could have left and gone into exile, as some people did, but she chose to stay in Germany. She chose to collaborate to a certain extent. And so to me, that sort of perspective is fascinating. This is somebody who is not a morally black or white character. This is definitely a moral gray area that I wanted to explore. So I've been attracted to characters like that in books that I read. I love when characters really have to struggle with their conscience or with the different sides that battle within themselves. And that was sort of the root of where I came up with the point of view of Clara.
Many Germans, including some quite high-ranking Nazis, maybe at Nuremberg, argued that they weren't Nazis themselves, they were just collaborating or following orders. It's very difficult to be clear about when somebody is telling the truth in that situation. You do touch on this in the novel. I'm wondering where you kind of come down on this question. Like, was each German responsible, or is it impossible to judge people individually for something so collective?
Yes, I was just following orders is one of those excuses that does not go down really well. It doesn't go down well with me either. And it was one of the things I touched on in the book with Clara in particular in relation to her father. You know, when someone does, you could say, bad deeds, at what point does personal responsibility stop and someone is pressured to do them? It's so hard. I don't believe in collective guilt. I don't believe that every single German from baby to old person in Germany at that time was guilty of Nazi atrocities, because it simply isn't true. You know, you can't paint everybody with one brush. You just, because if you look at the complexity of what was happening on the ground, you just can't do that. And it's too easy for us to stand back and say, oh, look, well, you know, every single person in that country is guilty. However, I think Germans today know that as a group, there is a responsibility for the country as a whole to acknowledge what the country did at that time. And I think that that's right. So modern Germany taking responsibility for what Nazi Germany did in the sense of saying, yes, we need to continue to stand up for what is right, which is human dignity. So I feel that if we kind of set aside the concept of I was just following orders, it's important for Clara to sit and look at her own individual actions and to judge her actions within the context and to really look them in the face, you know, and not let herself off too easily. And that's a really fine line to walk in fiction, particularly with, you know, a German of that time. And I don't claim that I did it all in a way that's going to be comfortable for people who read it. But it's a conversation that I think people should have and that is still relevant today.
Recently, I've noticed that there have been a few pieces of pop culture which have touched on post-war Germany, have touched on Germany during the war or neo-Nazism, for instance, the film Jojo Rabbit, which came out last year. Do you think interest in Germany's part in the war and in Germany after the war is on the rise?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I don't know if interest in Germany during the war afterwards is really increasing, because I think it's been there for a very, very long time. I think that over the course of the 20th century, when Germany was a divided country, there was a kind of global focus on the strange situation of having an East and West Germany, where that came from. And whether that was a condition that you could leave a country in, if you can leave a country dismantled like that forever. You know, after Germany reunited, I remember that there was a lot of sort of renewed discussion about what the impact on the world it was going to be when you had a united Germany again for the first time in 40 years. So I think maybe the interest is changing, but the interest has been there. So what I do see now is that I think more people are looking at Germany and Germans at the time in a much more nuanced way than they did in the past. You know, for very good reasons, Germans or Germany at the time were often depicted as evil characters or people who were seduced into doing evil. And you know, you can't really argue with that. That definitely was there. But now we've got this perspective, a longer perspective, so many years later, where we can sit and say, okay, so can we see or start to look at what were the complexities of German life and German culture on the ground? What were the decisions that Germans were making? And these were not easy decisions for many people. For some, many people don't care about politics. They just want to live their lives. Same in Germany under the Nazis as people today, wherever they may be. They were okay, but maybe now we can look at sort of the full gamut of decisions that people were making, of lives that people were living in Germany at that time. And that is really fascinating. So I would say that would be the difference that I've been seeing today.
Instead of sitting near the oil lamp like the other women, Clara lounged against the wall as far from the light as she could get. After sundown, when the Allies restored power, the overhead lights would frost them all, highlighting eye colour and birthmarks and all the other details she'd rather nobody concern themselves with. She touched the identity card in her pocket, testing the paper, the cheap cardstock, then the smooth surface of a photo. The card was almost legal, issued by the town with signature and stamps. According to the card, her name was Margareta Müller. It was too dim to read in the waiting room, so the women sized each other up in silence. They were mostly mothers, grey-faced and younger than her, their children on their laps. As Margareta Müller, Clara did her best to blend in. Her coat was the same patched wool as the other women, her stockings mended just like theirs. A small hole she hadn't got around to repairing was below the hem at her left knee. Still, the women stared. At the heels she'd chosen to wear despite the frost, at the hem of her skirt, slightly too high to be proper, at the dark red on her lips, makeup salvaged from the war. She knew what the women were thinking. Horrible, inappropriate, scandalous thoughts, just because she was showing a little knee. Mothers could be so hurtful.
You've mentioned that you're American and you live in Germany. What do you think are the main differences between the ways that Americans or British people and Germans commemorate or remember the war?
It was really interesting a while back when the VE Day was celebrated. I was on social media and I kind of could see some of the differences in how it was celebrated. a remembrance of the war is not something that happens in Germany quite the same way. Of course, Germany lost the war. Germany was obviously ashamed of what it did in World War II. And so the commemorance is normally on something like the liberation of Auschwitz on a day like that. It's a time for looking deeply at what was done in the past and what Germany as a whole can do moving forward to not only commemorate it, but to in some ways try to do better. It's actually a very basic thing for Germany, the self-reflection, but as well, how do you turn that into action? I think the president of Germany, while this VE Day commemoration was going on in other parts of the world, he had said something that really touched me as well, which was is that he can't really love Germany without also having a broken heart. And I feel that way also. This is my adoptive country, and I've been very welcomed here, and it is my home now. But if you are in any way aware of German history, and you probably should be if you live here, then it is very hard to just love the country in the sort of overwhelming patriotic way that you see in the UK or in the US. This love is always a little bit tainted. I don't think it's shame anymore, because nobody who lives in Germany now is directly related to what happened in World War II. But it's just a sadness and this sort of this broken heart. How could this great country that was so rich in knowledge, in science, in culture, and so on, commit such brutal atrocities in such a short period of time? How could they do that much, you know, damage to the world? So there is that melancholy in the commemorations in Germany compared to Americans and British.
Why did you decide to write a novel rather than a nonfiction book? Because you're a journalist and a historian.
I never actually considered writing a nonfiction book about post-war Germany. And I know that's really strange. I have this blog that has sources and nonfiction things all through it. I did a ton of research, and I did research for years and years and years, so I probably could write a nonfiction book. But I feel like my heart lies with fiction. I love to write stories. And I think that history, to be really cliched about it, really does come alive from historical fiction. And it doesn't have to be historical fiction about an actual battle or an actual historical event. What I like to do is to create a world, to recreate a world in the past with all of its, you know, beliefs and systems and whatever it is that creates this world. And then to use that as a playground in a way to look at various issues, maybe even challenge our points of view of what we have of the past. And so that was one of the reasons, even though I'm a journalist and even though as sort of an amateur historian, I could definitely have written nonfiction, I felt like it's actually more powerful, at least for me, to give people a character or different fictional characters to live in this world with these characters. And then that's a way to really experience the world and feel it. Because, you know, history is not just these dry facts, it's emotions and decisions and dilemmas. And you can see that much, much better through fiction.
What was your method of research? Did it feel different from researching for journalism, for instance?
Researching Finding Clara was very organic. I didn't know I was really going to write a book at first. I tend to just get really obsessed about a certain topic. And I've loved World War II since I was in high school and knew quite a lot about it. I was always interested in the German side. I don't know why. Maybe because I sensed that there was more to it than what we tended to get from the sources at that time. But once I actually came to Germany and was learned the language, and I was able to do a couple of things that are really crucial, I felt, for Finding Clara, for the book. And one was just being able to talk to people in German about what they thought of various things in World War II. And these weren't formal interviews like I would do as a journalist. You know, I might just be at the playground with my kids. And if a grandma is sitting next to me and her grandkids are out there playing, and we might just start chatting. And me being me, and I would just ask, do you remember anything from World War II, or were you a child right after World War II? And people would just start to talk to me, I think, because I asked these things in a very non-judgmental way. I was just curious, you know, how did people feel? What did they think? What were their experiences? You know, then afterwards, I might note it down in a notebook, but that was very informal. Once I learned the language, I could also just look up oral histories, and I absolutely love those. So all of these interviews that have been done with people who, you know, lived through World War II or the post-war years, you know, this is a generation that is dying and or a generation that is starting to talk, because for many, many, many years, the Germans generally did not say much about their own experiences to sort of the outside world, because they didn't want it to look like they were comparing their own suffering to the suffering of the Nazi victims. They were very aware of not wanting to do that. So it's really only been in maybe the last 20, 30 years where people have started to talk, and a good deal of that in German. And so having the language really opened up these sources. So I did this all in a very natural way and not in sort of the more rigid kind of journalism, you know, to get that story or to get the certain facts, because I was out to sort of get emotions and to get experiences and feelings. And that just took time, and it really took the German language.
What was your biggest challenge in switching from journalism to fiction?
Well, journalism is, for me, mostly about gathering facts and getting them right. And you have to test those facts and try to sort through them and present them in such a way that you're giving a certain view of the truth or what you feel is the truth of a certain situation. And fiction is different. Fiction can reach for, I guess you could say, higher truths, in the sense that fiction is about emotion and it's about experience, is something more visceral than journalism normally goes for, even though great journalism also does that. So I would say that my biggest challenge really was finding a way to write a story emotionally. So as a journalist, when you write an article, you're supposed to really not be emotionally involved. You're supposed to take that step back and try to be as objective as possible, knowing that you can't be 100% objective. But in fiction, I had to do the opposite. In the drafts that it took me, in years that it took me to write Finding Clara, I had to go deeper. Every time I had to just keep looking at how do I feel about this? What do I think about this? And to really test these things. And is it really what is happening on the paper? Did I actually express what I truly feel and think? What sort of thematics, what sort of arguments? How am I making Clara look, or how am I making Willie look? All of these things are much more sort of emotional questions, and that's a very, very different way of working than I worked when I was a journalist.
Are there any other periods or places that kind of inspire you for future novels, or are you not done with post-war Germany yet?
I love history, and if I had all the time in the world and all kinds of money so that I could research anything I wanted, I think I could just spend the rest of my life researching things like ancient China or, you know, medieval Japan. And just there's so many time periods. I love ancient Rome. I would write stories about all of these things if I could. But it's, you know, the research can be really challenging. And so at least for my second book, I decided to stay in post-war Germany. But I love to tell stories from a different perspective than what we normally see. And so for my second book, it's not a sequel to Finding Clara. It's a completely different story. It's set in Berlin in 1947. And Berlin at the time was divided into four sections that the victorious Allied powers shared power in the city. So the Soviet Union, the United States, Britain, and France were controlling Berlin at the time. And I'm writing a story from the perspective of two Soviet officers. Both of them are women who live in Berlin at that time. And I have just had so much fun researching how Soviet personnel lived in Berlin at that time. And it's been an extremely challenging thing to do as well, because I think it's pretty well known that Soviet troops had done some very, very horrible things when they swept into Germany towards the end of the war. By the time that my second book has started, most of these things have been reined in by the Soviet authorities. But still, there's sort of this cloud hanging over writing from the Soviet perspective. But I felt I really wanted to do that because, you know, we see so many books about the American perspective, about the British or and sometimes French and so on. And very, 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 very little that kind of tries to take a really good look at how was it to be a Soviet, a Red Army person with that baggage of how horrific the war in the East was and what that was like then to live in Germany right after the war. And I wanted to use women because it fascinates me to no end that I think about a third of the Red Army were women and that there were so many combat soldiers. That's why I wanted to stay in that post-war era a bit longer, but from a completely different side that I hope readers will totally be fascinated by as much as I am.
Annika, thank you so much for joining us.
Historical fiction.